Hey everyone, Wade McWayne here. We have an exciting episode of Scrotus POTUS for you. Oh my gosh, such great guests. We've got Chelsea Hart all the way from Alaska, Scott Capurro from California, and it's the end of the world special. Is it North Korea? I don't know. Is everyone going to die? DACA, what's going on with that? Kick out all the little immigrant stuff. Should we legalize all drugs? We're going to talk all about drugs. And are people too sensitive? That's right, snowflakes, I'm talking to you. It's Scrotus POTUS. Share, like, subscribe, do whatever the hell you got to do. Let's get into it. All right, everyone, another exciting episode of Scrotus POTUS. Thank you very much for our returning guest, Scott Capurro. We got two Americans, two West Coasters, Chelsea Hart. Guys, thank you very much for joining us on another great episode of Scrotus POTUS. It's the end of the world. Lots of crazy stuff going on. North Korea is going to blow everyone up. There's a hurricane that's just destroyed Texas. Another one's on its way to Florida. Yeah. What the hell are we doing, everybody?
What's happening? Wayne Rooney.
Oh, come on.
Oh, God. The whole world's
disturbed. Is that a big travesty, you think?
I know. Horrible. The whole thing. Poor Colleen.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus. She's pregnant, too.
I know. What happens? That's what happens when you marry a footballer, though. Come on, Scott.
I know.
It's no Hurricane Irma, but...
He's a football player.
Yeah. English football.
Yes. Yeah. He's a little guy.
Oh, is he the... No, he's the one that...
He's the ginger one that looks like...
He's the number one scoring player for, like, England in, like, international.
He's shit, though. Like,
he's not bad.
He's all right.
He's good. He's just... He's lost a lot of zip.
Is he gross? Okay, so he's... Doesn't he have this massive square head and, like, a face that is too small for it?
Well, physically, I don't think we should... Yes, he's a bit strange looking. But he's very good at what he does.
Yes.
And he's got a lot of pressure on him, and he got caught... Drink driving. They call it drink driving here, but it's drunk driving in the U.S.
Yeah, that's
right?
Weird.
Because you're drinking and driving. But yeah.
That sounds
drink
good.
Driving. Yeah. I anything that involves in drinking.
In Australia, they have drive-throughs for liquor stores. Hot.
I've been to America where they have, places where it's like you get drive-through. When I was down in New Orleans.
Amazing.
And you can have like a gun and the passenger can drive or can drink.
Perfect.
I know.
That
is like 7.5 ounce margaritas.
If you're driving behind the wheel, you want a gun anyway. Yeah,
you need a gun.
Settle some.
What are you going to point at people? Exactly. Intimidation.
Hello. Jesus.
Tiny penis, big car. Come on, Scott.
What?
How did this get going?
It's party size, I think it's the.
Party size? Is anyone worried about this end of the world North Korea stuff?
Yes.
Is it saber rattling? Is this actually getting real now? Especially you guys are from the West Coast, so you would probably be eviscerated first.
Well, you probably know this, that in North Korea, pot's legal. It grows along the side of the roads.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that they're angry. I just think they're high. I think they're like...
Pot doesn't make people angry, though. Like, pot doesn't make people want to bomb their friends.
But it does make you want to watch.
The kind of pot you
get.
Smoke
bombs going
pot,
off.
And then they'd all just want to, like, eat, like, nachos with us.
But
you
that's
know?
What they'd I mean. They watch the films of the bombs, like, oh, motherfucker, you do well, bitch. And then they just go to Ben and Jerry's. I don't think they're going to drop a bomb on anybody.
They've already done the tests, though.
The
whole thing is there's the anniversary of September 9th, and it's the anniversary of North Korea. And so the whole thing that they're wondering is...
That's why my gig in Epsom was pulled. I knew there was a reason.
Yeah, North Korean anniversary. I didn't even know what kind of cake to get. But the thing is, if it's on the anniversary, they do something... dramatic, which would be firing a missile across the bow.
When they talk about all these missiles that are going to America, they mean it's going to... I'm from Alaska. Like, when they say that they're firing missiles that will go to America, they mean that they will go to Alaska, which, like, oh my God, they're going... It's not that far. It's not that fucking impressive, though, but it is still American soil.
Can they point them at Sarah Palin? Can they point them right at her?
I don't even think she lives in Alaska anymore. Oh. She's such a fucking cunt.
Or she's alive.
Wouldn't they? Right? It's also, I mean, you're also on the border of Russia, too, so, you know, you don't want to also hit Russia, because the whole thing about these North Korean things is they don't know how accurate these missiles are going to be yet. You know, that's all like, hey, we're going to put a big bomb on it this time.
Yeah. Well, they're not great drivers. Yeah. The thing is, do you ever, someone had to say it, the only way this is going to happen is if the Chinese tell them to. China is running everything.
China's running the show. China's its main ally.
Right. And why would China want this to happen? They've got all this saved up oil in North Korea that China wants.
Mm-hmm.
China needs, and China doesn't want to disrupt its relationships with South Korea and Japan. They're huge trading partners for them.
Well, also, they don't want America in the Korean Peninsula. You know, obviously, because they say that North Korea has a whole bunch of really cool minerals, which we can use for smartphones and fancy things. And people say the conspiracy that the reason America really wants to go in there is to get those minerals and get all the
resources. You know, a lot of these things happen, these wars, so to speak, happen because of misunderstandings and things said that political leaders they misinterpret.
Of course.
And if there's anyone who can misinterpret a statement, it would be Trump. I think people's real fear is his trembling, wrinkled, you know, arthritic index finger over the red button. That's what they're afraid of.
Sure.
That he's going to, you know, take something personally. Big surprise. He's never done that before. And push the button. I mean, it was said that during his indoctrination, when he got the nomination for the Republican Party, you know, that they'd show him all the secrets. And apparently Trump kept saying to the generals at the big table, well, just nuke them. Can't we nuke them? Can we just nuke them? And the generals were like, well, no, no, that's not what we do. That's not the path we take. And a lot of the military in the U.S. have already said, we won't take his orders. I mean, I think Trump wasn't, his win wasn't a win for the Republican Party. It was a win for the military. It's a military coup in the U.S. Obviously, yep. This guy who's running, the chief of staff who's running the White House.
Foreign general.
The country is run by the military right yep. now. Maybe that's better than... You know, the alternative, which
he
is
no, he has literally no idea
no,
what goes into, like, even like that, like he has, he probably doesn't even know why, like, the first Iraq war was controversial in the first place. Like, there's just so many, oh my God, so many.
But I think the other thing is, too, is that unlike other past presidents who have dealt with North Korea in sort of either a detente or in any kind of aggression way, Trump has actually, you know, rattled up the aggression and in a way been surprised by the fact that they've responded with even far more aggression in return.
But I think what happened also is over the last 15 years, the U.S. has really been focused on the Middle East and has forgotten what's going on in the Korean Peninsula. And I think that's made angry the third generation of leaders who's, you know, the family.
Nobody's looking at us anymore. Nobody cares.
That's why he's doing this. He wants to be looked at. He wants to be noticed. And I think the big mistake is making the leader of North Korea, as the American press tends to do, and comedians alike, like people like us, make him look like a clown or sound like an idiot, like he doesn't know what he's doing. But he clearly does. He's assassinated his half-brother and his uncle. He poisoned his own uncle and then killed his uncle's wife for, you know, protesting that. So he is not really a family man. And he's not, he's a good strategist, though. And he got into the position he's in at a very young age because he does know what he's doing. And he's countering the Chinese right now. He's, you know, a country with fewer than 30 million people in it is countering one-fifth of the world's population and arguably the largest wealth in the world. I mean, it's pretty amazing what he's
able to do. Well, I mean, it's amazing, just as you say, because he is willing to push everybody's buttons. And it was Putin who actually said that, you know, you're not going to get them to give up on the nuclear program. They would rather eat grass than they would give up their nukes.
But the thing is, it's not him pushing buttons. It's leaders allowing their buttons to be pushed.
Yes.
He's been testing bombs in that peninsula for 15 years. Obama was dealing with it through diplomacy. Now, these bombs are farther reaching now.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there is a way to deal with it.
And well, testing a hydrogen bomb contravenes the world. You know, there's no one in the world that's like, that would be really happy. Maybe Iran is a little bit like, hey, good one. But no one else in the world is like, oh, you can't test hydrogen bombs. You don't know, especially China going, what the radiation? What are you doing? This thing's going to seep out of there.
Yeah.
You can't control a hydrogen bomb.
That, you know, the radiation has been leaking out of Japan, as the Korean leader said last week. Radiation has been leaking out of Japan for the last, however long it's been?
From Fukushima.
Years. They haven't shut it down, and they're silencing anyone who speaks out about
it. Yes. So,
and they're starting to see the waves of that radiation making its way to the States.
Oh, it's been washing ashore on the West Coast for years, body parts and refrigerators and stuff. But also, I think the leader of North Korea is also saying, you people test bombs all the time.
Yeah. Well, it is a bit of a hypocrisy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, because I think that we live by our press and we believe everything that we hear and that we're great and we're righteous and we're good. And
people fail to
realize that we're a bit of a fucking asshole
people
sometimes.
Don't turn around to look that, like, we actually went into the Middle East illegally against the advice of the UN. We've, you know, I think when Obama left office, what was it? He was in
number one
war
drone.
With nine countries.
Yeah, number one drone
no
killer.
No American knows that. I was actually talking about this with someone the other day. Like, Eurocentric cultures, like America kind of mirroring where we came from, obviously, and Britain and France, people who kind of made their countries off of subjugating other countries, have no idea the consequences of what goes on to make their country the way it is. Like,
how they cannot know, though, I don't know.
Britain has no idea. Like, Britain has literally no idea, like, why America seceded. They have, like, people call it the American Rebellion. They have no idea that King George was shitting all over us with unfair tariffs and taxes, that he, like, made unfair laws that said, like, British military could hop up in your house, like, and you came home from work, and, like, suddenly there's a British military in your house, and you're out of home. You know, like,
but Europe has never stopped colonializing. They still are.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's what the workforce in Europe is all about. That's what Eastern Europeans are doing here. They're being colonized by the European economy, by the EU. They have to be here because their economies, I mean, Romania doesn't really exist anymore as an economy at all.
Well, because you've got, as you say, the governments open up to the free market, and then suddenly you've got Subways, Starbucks, you've got all these things, these corporate cultures that start crushing the little guys in all their countries. And as a result, as you say, the labor is suddenly like, well, crap, I don't want to work at Starbucks. You know, my family used to own a cafe, now we got to move. And I think people want a lot more opportunities, and America obviously has a lot of opportunities if you're, you know, born there.
Hard to get in, though.
Yeah. You gotta be born
America
there.
America has a lot of opportunities if you're born into the right family. Because, like, my mom has never stopped working a day in her... And this is also... Did you see this model who got fired from L'Oreal? Mm-hmm. Did you see that?
The what is she, the transgender? It was like,
she pissed me off so bad.
Screw white people?
Yeah.
Is that the one?
Like, she said that, like, all white people are racist because they benefit from a racist system. What I was saying is that, like, Eurocentric cultures like America, Europe, and France and Britain and countries like that, they have no idea what goes on into creating the countries that they live in. Like, British people don't know the full extent of what the British Empire did. They don't know what they did to Kenya. They don't know what they did to India. They don't know that Kashmir is now one of the most militarized zones in the world because of Britain divvying up in India.
That was a quick and sloppy job, that one. It was.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so
there's a lot of quick and sloppy jobs when it comes to taking over people and basically subjugating their rights. And, you know, it's you want to push it under.
She said that all white people are racist because they benefit from a racist system. The system is racist, but the people who benefit from it are not racist because they don't know that they're being racist. They're ignorant. Ignorance and racism are two of the. Racism is willful. Racism is a thing that is taught that you have to learn and accept and practice. Ignorance is not willful. That's why, like, they put the word willful before ignorance so that they can specify that it's
well, you can get hard, ignorance though, for Christmas.
I'm not black, surprisingly.
What?
I know. And not anymore.
Oh, hey.
I wanted a career. But it's hard, I think, to imagine what a person of color goes through.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to try to step into their...
Put yourself in their handcuffs. Shoes.
Exactly. The thing is, you know, when I'm with my husband in California, because he's Brazilian, but he looks Latin. He looks South American or Central American.
Yeah.
People assume he's Mexican.
Yeah.
We were at a friend's house in L.A. and she works for television. And even though, and they're lesbians with twin kids and they're the success story. Huge house, looks like a TV set. And they're going on and on about themselves, rattling on and about rich actresses they know. Anyway, the woman, I don't know, the wife, the blonde. Didn't want to cook. Didn't want to do the barbecue. So she asked Edson to go do it.
Did you think she just because she assumed he's a barbecuer guy?
She thought he's Mexican.
Okay.
Brazilians get do out make the back delicious and, food, by the way.
He's a great cook. He made lunch today. Yeah, sauteed,
Brazilians are
sauteed,
insane cooks.
It was great. Yeah. But she sent him out in the back to cook. Now,
with your permission, yeah.
And he did. And yeah. I went back there. I'm like, what are you? He said, you know what? I can't listen to them go on and on about money and their success and how great their kids are. Those little monsters. I'll stay out here. I'll make the meal. You just do what you have to do, and we'll get out of here, right? So, I was fine. I've known him for a long time. Can you cut that? I've known this woman for a long time. I get where she's coming from, and she has worked very hard. But anyway,
sure.
It was just like you said. They weren't. They would never consider themselves racist.
No.
They're white women from entitled backgrounds. What they are, what their behavior is ignorant.
Let's move on. I also want to talk about DACA, because you guys are American. I'm not. And so you did DACA, right? It was to help all the people that were children of immigrants before 2012.
Another non-committal policy of Obama's.
But non-committal, 14 years has been languishing in Congress, right? And so Trump's basically, he's sort of flip-flopped on it now, because he said, let's get rid of it. You know, basically, it sounds like a cheap shot. Basically go, hey, put your hand up if you're an immigrant and you got here undocumented. Okay, great, thanks. Now get out. You know,
yeah.
I don't know if that's what he wants. I mean,
I don't think he wants it either.
His real predecessor, Bush, didn't want that. Bush wanted to legalize everybody so they'd start paying into health care and insurance, which is a good idea.
It makes so much more sense.
Sounds like a very Republican idea.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And Obama scrapped it and did this, which was a temporary idea. He was just kicking the ball down the road.
Sure. You think it was to make himself look good?
Well, I also think that he felt a bit of empathy for these people because he had not been in a similar situation, but something like that might have happened to him.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what has happened, though, is the smugness of the Democrats. Again, they thought Hillary was going to win and she'd fix it.
Sure.
And instead, they've put it in the hands of someone who doesn't really know how to deal with immigration policy and wants to do what he thinks will make him the most popular because he's announced his 2020 campaign.
Oh, I didn't know he fully officially announced it. But congratulations and go to win.
You know, when he was in Texas, he was selling hats, raising money for it.
He
was really warm in Texas.
Was he selling his own hats?
Didn't drown.
Was he selling his own hats for his own foundation?
Yes.
I didn't think that was legal.
Well, he was.
Okay.
So he's trying to raise money for his campaign. And he wants this decision to be populist.
Yeah.
But I think what he'd also like to do is fix it for good.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be nice.
Yep.
If you get these people some sort of permanency. And so it's going to, like you said, it's going to languish in the Senate and the House again.
Yep.
They all have elections in a year, and they're terrified of their positions. I mean,
sure.
Paul Ryan is not sleeping at night, if you've seen a picture of him recently.
He's
losing it. Cannot form a sentence. His hands are shaking. I've never seen him like this. And Marco Rubio is hiding in a cave in Florida somewhere. None of them will comment on anything Trump is doing, and they're so freaked out about their future.
What do you think? Because any one word could put you on a polarization level of...
They're afraid of him.
Yeah.
They're terrified of him.
You saw what happened to Lisa Murkowski when she stood up. Like, he started seating her next to him. Fucking, oh my God. I started talking about this in Edinburgh as well. Like, people like you know, the reason people have heard of Sarah Palin, right? Is because she, like, functionally was the governor of Alaska for 2 years. She hasn't had a legislative position since 2007.
And then there's the anti-Semitism. But anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just, it's like, it makes so much more sense. And this goes to America, right?
Yeah, it goes around the world. Okay, we're fancy with the technology on the YouTubes
Americans,
and the stuff.
Okay, like, if there's one Trump supporter out there, I'm just saying, like, it makes so much more sense financially, spiritually, everythingly, to make these people legal, like, give them paperwork if they've never had a criminal record, because they are already living in America, living the American dream. And, like, these children, like, most of them have probably never broken a law, probably have no criminal record whatsoever. They only broke one law in their life, and that was the one that they could not help to break, coming with their parents illegally into the United States. It makes so much more sense to get their taxes, get their lovely taxes, get the roads built.
Well, they're already paying taxes, actually, all of them. Yeah, they've mentioned that. I mean, it's true. It just makes it more sense to legalize them, because then if something happens, then... Yeah. But I think that, you know... I think, and it's all the, you know, there's so many ironies in Trump's situation, his wife and her origins and how she worked illegally in the country when she...
Oh, my God. I met a Slovenian guy in Edinburgh who knew her in Slovenia when she was a model, because he worked in TV in Slovenia. Yeah. It was quite interesting.
It is strange, though, but I think that he doesn't know where to turn, and I think he's being obviously advised by a lot of different people, because he keeps firing people and replacing them. Which is what he does in business.
It's a business decision. You know, you're not doing well, cut, you're gone, you're fired.
You can't do it in his situation. And I think that he's...
But do you keep dead wood or dead weight? Because his whole thing was to drain the swamp. And if you get there and you realize you're sitting next to a lizard.
You are the swamp.
Yeah. Mm. But you're also, I mean, that is sort of the irony of it all. You want to replace the shit that you want to get rid of. And he has gotten rid of a lot of crap.
The question really is, how much power does the president actually have?
He doesn't really have much.
He can sway public opinion a bit. But obviously with Obama in office, part of the reason why a large percent of the black population in the U.S. either didn't vote or voted for Trump was because for 8 years they'd been seeing their brothers and sisters shot in the streets with nothing but an acceleration of violence.
Yeah.
And they thought, why should we elect another person that's going to continue his policies like Hillary? Why don't we get somebody new in? Maybe in desperation it will change.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. If you are an ethnic minority living in the States, there is no safety net. And I only say that living here as a foreigner. I recognize the safety net around us, and I'm impressed by it. Mm-hmm. My husband, being Brazilian, feels the same. When I go home to the States, I'm alarmed by the amount of homeless people as it increases in San Francisco. As the wealth increases, so do the poor. And that's a game in...
But that's something we should touch on in an economic sense, that the 1% is getting richer. And it's still, to me, and even as a quite conservative person, I want to know who these 1% are. Who are these people, you know?
The problem is that the Supreme Court allowed corporations to obtain the rights of citizens about 20 years ago. So you might as well say which of the corporations. It really is a lot who are located in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Which are Amazon, Google, Facebook, and so on. And biotech companies you've probably never heard of that have a winning relationship with companies in Switzerland that fly to and from and, you know, do their tax returns in the air.
Yeah.
So they pay the least. I just think, you know, there are two things have to happen. You have to diminish the American dream to zero because it doesn't exist. And the minute you tell people what the reality is, which is you can have nothing because they have everything, they might want to change.
Yeah.
And kill the royals. You've got to kill the British royalty.
Kill the British royalty to help America?
You have to assassinate them. There's no way out.
Who are we starting with?
Oh, well, obviously, don't kill the redhead. Leave her second son alone.
He's juicy.
Okay.
He's totally juicy, and he's not a royal, obviously.
Why? Because he's going to marry an American?
No, a black American.
Because he's not a Windsor. Let me make that clear. We all know that. But you have to... Kate was just a roar to damages because she sat in a backyard at a friend's house with her top off and someone took a photo of her. They give the money just to be cunts. It's the weirdest thing. Things in Europe, the way property is handled, the way finance is dealt with, and Europe is the American model. It will never change here until you rid yourselves. It's the fifth largest economy in the world. Still, even though they're shooting themselves, they're their own worst enemy. They can't get out of their own way, the British. And still their economy succeeds. But to distribute wealth, you have to lose it. You have to get rid of them.
But then you're also getting rid of the class system too, which is an unspoken sort of thing here.
Never go away. But they're beyond the class system. They're like Martians.
It's ingrained in them. I totally feel like down south here, because I'm slightly olive and I have this weird, like, I have, because Alaskans, like, you have a very kind of like West Coast accent versus Alaska, because this, we're the youngest state in the union. Like, we have a lot of Southerners, a lot of Midwesterners, a lot of East Coasters, because everyone kind of came up with the oil company. So we have a very like muddled accent, and I don't really have a strong accent anymore. And even, I had even a weaker one in Alaska. So I have this soft accent, and I'm kind of olive. So people are, like, especially when it's sunny and stuff. Oh, my God, when it's sunny, I get, like, different rays. But people in this country always ask me, where are you from? You know, and I'm just, oh, I'm from Alaska. No. But where are you from? You know, and people here are conditioned to care about that. People down south.
You don't think they do that in America as well?
The class system in America, it's just more hidden.
They don't do it in Manchester. Yeah. I go to Manchester, I say I'm American, they're like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Well, London, yeah, Scotland, London's a different entity.
Nice. Yeah.
You know, if I've gone up north in parts of England, and your accent's a novelty. People like, read this for me, read this. And it's like, okay, am I going to get laid? Sure, I'll read anything.
There's this weird class system in the US, like people like, I mean, just use the Kennedys, for example. That family, these people do all they can to make themselves seem down to earth. But these are people that we will never meet or have any contact with in any way. At least in London, you might be sitting across from someone on the tube, because everybody takes the tube. But in the U.S., there's this mist of really, really wealthy people.
It's a very gated community. And I notice that when I'm back.
Privatized.
In Canada, we don't have that as much. It's a lot more middle class. And our middle class is actually growing. Whereas I go to America and you sort of go, it's like, Jesus, look at some of these homes. And then some of the homes, you're just like, I can't even see those homes because it's blocked by everything.
Yeah.
And then you see the poverty like you've never. And I'm starting to see a lot more homeless people in London. In the past few years, I've seen the increasing number of homeless people.
To look for them. They're hidden more here. They hide in parks and stuff, but there are a lot.
Well, I live near Finsbury Park, and underneath the bridge in Finsbury Park, you see it like six or seven of them. And most of them are women. And most of them have really bad drug problems. Mm. And you sort of, you know, people walk by, they've got their Evening Standard, they keep going, but, you know, there's still that, what the fuck are
there's
we
no
doing?
No assistance for them once they go on drugs and stuff. It's quite sad. I met a girl, because I'm a street performer as well, so I see a lot of, like, fringe personalities. I mean, there's a reason some of them don't have day jobs, I'm just going to say. But I met this girl, completely lucid, very lovely, super, super tiny, very sweet. She was homeless. She's about 17 years old. She's homeless. You know, if you're, she's clearly, you know, all there.
Yeah.
Clearly got all her wits about her. If you are a lucid thinker, you know, kind, nice, and you're homeless at that age, something happened to you. Like, she obviously had home troubles. And I just thought to myself, it's just like, you know, I tried to help her, like, offer her help and stuff, but, you know, I never heard from her again.
Sure.
It is like, how many people are like that, that, like, for whatever reason, have to run away from home, young, vulnerable, meet some guy on the street who offers them the world, and boom, they're on this drug, and now they're falling through the system because they're not going to get help once they're on drugs. It's just, it's so sad.
Well, I mean, it's something I sort of had down to talk about, but legalizing of drugs. I mean, Canada, they're legalizing pot next year. There's a lot of countries that are legalizing. There's people that aren't even Canada. We're legalizing shoot-up zones. For people that, because with the fentanyl crisis that we're starting to have, the heroin, the opiate problem, fentanyl is
killer that killed Michael Jackson.
It is a it's basically about 500 times stronger than heroin. It is an opiate that is making huge rounds in Vancouver. I think there's something like five people a weekend dying.
In the U.S. it's the biggest problem.
It's a fastest growing. It's coming here, and so but the problem is, and then we also have when you don't have the legalization of marijuana, you have these people doing spice, and this spice is synthetic marijuana that is.
I have friends who got on that.
Fully dangerous, and there's a lot of countries that are looking at it and going, look, if it comes from the earth, and it's a natural plant or based derivative or things like that, then what the hell? Why not?
Statistically proven has not killed a single person by over.
And you know, you start looking at even rock stars will say that the whole thing, they could do any drug. As soon as they took pills, it was all downhill.
Yeah.
So, you know, the man-made things. And you've got countries like Uruguay has legalized marijuana. They're legalizing drugs. Portugal has legalized.
Portugal legalized everything.
Well, of course the Americans don't like it because they're run by big pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
You know, if someone's like, hey, you know what? You got a headache. Why don't you take Advil or take something? You know, I'll just smoke a joint and sleep. Oh, no. That's illegal. It'll get rid of it quicker. No. Yeah. It's illegal.
Just if you look at Colorado, its economy like tripled once they.
Except it's illegal. It's illegal, you know.
Federally, but
federal. So they can't. They don't get tax benefits. They don't get benefits for people. You have to pay everything in cash. Mm. You can't get loans.
That's from Washington State as well.
It's all every state.
Alaska's just I think legalized it as well.
Canada, they're legalizing it, but they're doing it in my province in a monopoly kind of way, basically. Because in my province, Ontario, you can only buy beer from the beer store, liquor from the liquor store. So that's like, you can't buy it in a corner shop. And now they're going to be selling marijuana. And it's a monopoly, and it's a government-owned monopoly. So the government runs it all, and all of these people are making huge amounts of money. It's all public service. No one in Ontario knows how much these people are making or what they're getting in benefits, whether wine companies or pot companies are flying around the world. Canada, we don't know. But we are legalizing it July 1st next year. And our prime minister is doing everything to sort of happen. But Canadians have been smoking it for ages. I mean, where I'm from in Canada, it's like you smoke pot because you live in the country. You want to drive, but you're not going to drive drunk. Right. So,
London too. Every street you walk down, you smell weed everywhere.
Oh yeah,
It's, you know, I was talking about people like this. London or the UK seems far more unable or unwavering in wanting to legalize marijuana.
I just think their government is so fucked right now that they don't know what they're doing. And I think,
they're kind of hiding behind all this Trump drama.
It's the Trump and the Brexit, and they're transitioning so much, and they don't even have a leader, really.
There's no real leader.
No leader. May fucked herself.
May has got this sort of serpentine grasp, like a boa constrictor on it,
but I am the prime minister.
It's a very tenuous grip, and I mean, you've got all these backbenchers and people, and
the more you have to call out that you are, the smaller your dick gets.
Seriously. Yeah. Anyway, I'm the host of this show, but it is the thing, and I think a lot of people, it is that sort of, you know, monkeys hear no evil, see no evil of Brexit. I think a lot of people are going, what the fuck is going on? Yeah, you know, what decisions did we make?
Well, the EU's making it very clear that the British demand to start, to begin negotiations and also start trade is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, that puts a lot of things into question. Mm-hmm. And then it makes you wonder, it's like, and not even in a Hitler-esque kind of moment, but when there's a political vacuum, and there's going to be a vacuum, just like there was in America, when you have a political vacuum where people are like, we want someone who leads. Sometimes you get someone good, a lot of times you get an asshole.
When there's political instability anytime, that's when terrorists start looking around and thinking,
perfect time.
Sounds good, smells good.
Yeah, because then someone's got to step up as a leader. And you've got Trump, no matter what people say about him, he is a definitive leader. He says stuff, he works, he stands by it.
But he's contradictory. And
he is contradictory, but at least he's talking.
Yeah.
At least he's getting something out instead of hiring, we're working on it. And people are wondering, did they actually win the election? Mm-hmm. What the hell's happened? Mm-hmm. Was Brexit real? Because I remember I think of myself as quite informed. I didn't know it was going to be that binding. I didn't know it was like, and fuck, we're out. It's like, whoa.
But I think that it's almost as if I think what upsets some of my British friends is that they behave as though now they didn't know that they lived in a country that was so disenfranchised. They didn't know that the Scottish felt a certain way, Northern Irish felt a different way.
Of course they did.
And the Welsh. Well, you know, you live here and you think, well, it's one country. You know, we've been the most stable transition of power in Europe for the last 1,000 years. So that will continue. And whatever they say with the Brexit thing, it will just sort of work itself out and fix itself. And like most people, they don't really want to know. They just want it to work.
You know? I want more money. Yeah.
But also, people have kids and jobs. They come home at night. They barely have the energy to eat. They don't want to sit in front of TV and BBC, which is biased, and watch it for 2 hours and try to figure it out.
Yeah.
I think what's adorable about the British public is they have faith that their leaders are telling them the truth. Mm-hmm. Some do.
Oh, that's so cute.
I know. And that
50 million a day on the NHS.
350. You're right. Yes. Yeah. It was just, you know, as a foreigner, I guess, maybe we're more cynical from where we are.
Could be.
This is what I kind of noticed. There's this almost this sense of entitlement here that it'll work itself out. Like, I'm just going to keep being fed.
Upper lip.
Yeah, there's
keep
this.
Calm, carry on.
I think it has to do with just the way things are structured here. Like people, they don't have to work for as much as Americans do in their everyday life, like medication even or housing or anything. Like if something went wrong, there's a safety net here to take care of people. So they're just like, versus in America, like even when we were 13 colonies, you know, we were just like, you know what? We looked west and we were like, we're going to go that way.
We did believe
until
Obama,
we can't get
though.
Anymore.
We
yeah.
did.
He was a very convincing man.
We all wanted a black friend.
Writer.
We all did. We wanted a black friend. And
he was, you know, obviously you got a law professor in there. This guy's going to talk. He's smooth as silk. I mean,
And the wife's smart and the kids are sweet. Yeah. And we just thought, well, he'll close Guantanamo, and then he never did.
No.
Yeah.
I think, you know, do when you look back at the legacy of Obama, do you think people are going to start really questioning it?
And you should ask her, because she's less than half my age, and she's from a generation that grew up.
Yeah.
I remember his election. You know, I remember.
I remember all of it, but I had already suffered through Nixon, Agnew,
Gerald Ford.
A lot of terrible.
Obama was the first election I cared about.
Yeah. So for you, it was very inspiring, I think, as a young person. And maybe
I think for my mom especially, because she grew up in Detroit in the 60s in a black ghetto, because she's obviously white, but they were that poor. you know. So she dealt with the brunt of a lot of the racial issues that were happening during the 60s. She got beat up by white and black gangs. Her and her friends on the way to school got beat up by black and white gangs. So she saw, I think, firsthand some of the ugliness of American racial hatred. And to see someone like that get elected, like to see someone of color getting elected to the highest office in the land, was actually made her quite happy, because this is something that she'd wanted, that she'd like, that kind of made her feel like maybe the world had kind of come to a better place and everything. But I mean, he wasn't a perfect politician, and none of them ever are. He was kind of the establishment favorite, wasn't he? Everyone was like, Obama, Obama.
Well, it was also Oprah Winfrey, you know, one of the richest women in America, had him on her show, and basically, you know, she was the one that put a lot of that in motion.
It's because she was...
This is the guy, here's the guy I want.
She's the most important, I think she was the most
very
important woman
but
in
also,
American
yeah,
television
she
at
is,
the time.
She's, but Bush
she's
was,
fucking Oprah.
Yeah, exactly.
She's Oprah.
She's Jesus. But Bush was such a joke at that point. She should run.
Yeah,
we need Oprah in office.
But I mean,
Oprah
there's going to be a lot of people that think that Trump. At the same time, there was excitement for Obama. There's a lot of people that had the same excitement for Trump.
He'll win in 2020.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I bet on him to win as soon as he announces his candidacy. I bet.
Why
on
would
him.
He lose? The Democrats have no.
Trump. I bet on him.
As Democrats
soon as...
have no leadership, and he's in the papers every paper every day.
Yeah,
he's if there's one thing he's good at, it's media attention.
And he has the lowest approval rating of any president in history.
When he runs, he'll win.
It all it takes
depends
is one.
On who runs against him. I think Bernie should run again.
You know, and we've talked about it before, but he also people forget the fact that he has Mark Burnett behind him, the greatest television producer of all time, who created the Survivor, Apprentice.
That's how you don't he made think a lot of his money. Trump.
You don't think he's scripting this? They don't. You don't think there's a story arc in this
they've
that
got writers
Trump
following
is? Oh, Burnett is organizing this whole thing and putting it all. It's you know, it's the classic. And then when we get to here, this will be a big crisis and you're going to save it, and then cut to act four and scene.
I think part of the firing of people has all been predetermined.
Yep.
And it's just they want him to look powerful, like he knows what he's doing.
Sure.
Fire him, replace him, get him in, do that, her, that. And then people feel like, oh, well, at least he's working. He's
I'm doing business. Exactly.
Yeah, you know? And also, again, the American president, how much he has of a direct effect on the economy. You know, I think Clinton got lucky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was during
the
tech.
Market, it kind
tech
of
was sort of happening. It was a sort of growth of computers.
And I think that's happening now, too.
If only Al Gore had won.
Well, he did.
He did, but
yeah.
Then he didn't. Fucking Florida. See, this hurricane is the consequence.
No, it's like what you said earlier.
God.
It's poverty. And it's people's inability to understand how the political system works.
Yeah, to understand all the pieces that have gone into creating the society they live in.
And they want to be swayed and pushed and told what to do. And I think that Gore, he became fragile at a very inopportune moment for him. He should have not been a snowflake. He should have stomped his feet and screamed like the other one did.
Yeah.
And instead, he gave in.
It's interesting you mentioned that because
it was sad. It was that speech was sad.
Yeah.
And it was really disheartening for a lot of people who supported him. Because he'd run a pretty decent campaign, except, anyway, the debates were not great to watch.
No, he was not very clear on those. And Trump was good in his debates. But we sort of mentioned, as you said, snowflaking, and something I want to sort of touch on as we sort of end it. You know, you've obviously been in comedy a lot longer. But are you starting to see, and I mean, there was professors in university have started talking about at Cambridge, who was saying that there's too many snowflakes out there. There's too many kids that, instead of challenging, you know, opinion, they just say, I'm offended and I'm hurt.
Yeah.
And they want a result of that.
You know, it's funny. I just was up in Edinburgh just for a few days, and we did that Hate and Live show
with
Darius Davies hosting it. And he makes a speech at the beginning to about 150 people at midnight. The show starts.
Yeah.
It's a free show.
Darius is very interesting, engaging guy.
Love Darius.
Lovely. And he tells them, if you know what a trigger word, if you have any trigger words, if you don't even know what a trigger word is, then get out.
Yeah.
Because this show, you know, and then blah, blah, blah. And then through the show, a few people did walk out. And then a woman texted him at the end and said, I have just spent the worst hour of my life in your show. Now, she was mortally offended. The thing is, it's midnight. The show's free. Everyone's drunk. You can leave whenever you want.
Could have been Leo's doing, by the way.
Yes. Yes. And he's already told you.
Leo's a Tory, and he kind of makes that clear.
Yeah, yes. He's 6'7" Tory.
He's a smart Tory.
He's a great comic.
He's ragingly smart. He used to work for the Department of Defense of this country. He knows.
All right.
A genius.
Excluding me, they were seeing four really great comics for nothing in this beautiful room at midnight. It's like anyway.
Who was on?
Oh, it was
you were.
Darius, me. Leo, Brian, He's really funny. Another tall guy, English.
Yep. Okay.
Anyway, so. Yep.
Sorry.
That's right. But Brian Mulholland. But it's just to feel as though you, as an audience member, have the right to stop a show. The thing is, if I'm offended, I just leave.
Yeah.
This has always been an issue, though, with comedians. It's nothing new. And I think the challenge of doing stand-up is finding a different voice to make a room full of strangers understand who you are, which is what we do. I mean, it's not worse now. It's better. Come on. Her and me. Her and me would have not been playing the comedy circuit in Britain 30 years ago. Yeah. Or if we were, we would have been an anomaly.
Laughing, I wouldn't have been out. You know, people like Ellen DeGeneres came out so that people like me could do comedy openly. You know?
And I wasn't out in L.A. in the 80s when I started because there were no role models.
Yeah.
It's better now. Yeah. Okay, if you play university, and I have started playing them in the U.S., and I've been warned by so many friends, be careful when you go there, anything could happen. But, you know, you just have to go, research it a bit, find out who's in the audience, and then talk to them like they're people. It's not that different.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Margaret Cho told me years ago, because she didn't start, but she built a real following through the university circuit, and I think she still probably plays it. And it is a very alternative crowd, and of course they can be fragile. What they're probably doing is just repeating, actually, what they've heard their parents say, because a lot of young people just mock and mimic their own political beliefs. That's probably what they're doing.
Yeah.
But knowing that, if you speak to them in a way that makes your stuff a bit more accessible, that's all the challenge is. And also, you know, if you play The Store on a weekend, you're playing to upwards near 400 strangers. Half the room might be foreign. A third of them might not even speak the language. It's their first language.
Yeah, sure.
That's another challenge. Yeah. I mean, I think the beauty of live performance is from a performer's perspective and an audience is not knowing what to expect.
Yeah.
You start to get a bit of grief or resistance like happens in Edinburgh at almost every show.
Yeah.
You said you feel like you're a stronger comic after that run.
Oh, yeah.
And that might be one of the reasons why.
Yeah.
Because you've learned to feel at home
on
a stage that may not feel like home when you first walk on it. That's the challenge.
Do you find that there's people more challenging you now? Because I've had it, and I don't do as much stand-up anymore, but I obviously have 20 years experience. But I've found that now people are, like, more direct, and it's like, I was offended by that. Whereas, you know, 15 years ago, people would just be like, oh, I didn't like that joke.
It's
fuck
so
you.
Funny. We were just
trying to police freedom of speech. It's like, weird, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Do you play Ball Rumba? Do you play that room? The Comedy Carnival? Susanna Sola?
No.
She's great. And it's a great room.
Yeah.
And I was playing a couple weeks ago. And it was just, the room is usually good, but it was great. They had a really good compare on it. Really changes the mood. It was
of course. Yeah.
So I came backstage, and I middled, and the headliner was back there, a black guy. And he's very good. And I was saying, oh, they're lovely. They're particularly good tonight. And right then, this beautiful, statuesque black woman had the gall to pass through the curtain, under the sign of the club, past the DJ booth, into where the comics sit. Like, do all that.
Yeah.
To tell me you're completely, incredibly vulgar and wrong. You need to tell more white jokes.
Nice.
Now, I opened that night, my first time, with a Klan joke, because of the KKK thing that just happened. And I picked on a white couple next to her.
Yeah.
Left her alone.
Yeah.
She'd been sitting like this all night. So I just left it alone.
Yeah.
And then
you always see those people, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's like they want to make their presence known. I'm going to glare and send off negative energy.
But it's fine. That's how she felt. Yeah. I left her alone. I chatted with the white couple, made fun of them for a while. By the way, again, I have to mention this. I'm white.
Yeah. So,
and I mentioned that older. And then I said, ma'am, you have to get out from the green room. You're not welcome here because this is a performance area. Actually, you're not meant to be back here. Please leave. And I had to say it to her twice. And I thought the entitlement of this person, not because she's female. It's none of those things about her, or black, or what. It's her wealthy upbringing, or whatever her middle class upbringing.
She feels he has the right to make
her opinion is so entitled that she has to tell you
to break all those rules to get back to where we were seated.
Yeah.
So many employees she had to walk by. It's like, do you see? Can you imagine? Anyway.
How long do you think she was going through the conversation? Or you know what? I'm going to tell him. I'm gonna.
I do.
It did make me think, though. Maybe I should.
I do a
white
bit.
People more. But then I also thought, you know. It's fine. It's live performance. That's
sure. The sense of entitlement. Like,
but we put ourselves out there, so we have to kind of expect.
Yeah, but we're funny, so fuck them.
But the thing about humor is it can so easily be construed as being offensive.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be, but you enter a comedy club under the pretense that you're there to be entertained, offended perhaps even, but you're there to listen to someone who's written
since
jokes.
9/11, everyone thinks their opinions are of equal importance.
Yeah.
Why do you think 9/11?
Because everyone was hurt by that.
Yeah.
Everyone's a victim by that. So because my neighbors and all that. And now a lot of people have, because of the Middle East and what's going on there, there's a lot of middle-class people with ethnic concerns with no minority friends of their own. And maybe this woman in that room felt isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what maybe I should have gone directly to her. And you know me.
Yeah.
Usually I do.
Oh, God, yeah.
I jump into the car crash.
Yeah.
But she was so beautiful and so, you know, no one wants to see a gay man harassing a woman.
No.
No one wants to see that. Or a man harassing a woman.
Anyone harassing anyone. No one likes it.
I mean, a female going after a female is one thing in a
comedy.
Yeah, it's
sexy.
It's a different atmosphere. Yeah. But, like, you know, I used to work with Rosie O'Donnell before she was out in L.A. That was who I used to work with at Igby's in Santa Monica. And she would go after women in the audience, like, I'm going to get your man, you bitch. I'm going to fucking kill you. And then she'd be like, hey, faggot, where'd you get those shoes? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right? So I didn't know she was gay. I mean, and she didn't know I was.
Okay.
It was just such a... Oh, such a tough.
How did the black performer, the headliner, react to this woman doing it? Did he?
That's the funny thing. I turned to him and I said, I'm so glad you're here to see that.
Yeah.
And he said, why? I said, because if I told that story.
Yeah.
Who was it?
It was Ola.
Okay.
Ola!
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
And very funny.
Yes, Ola.
Probably
Ola,
ripped it.
And
the saddest thing is that she left.
Oh, she didn't even stand to see him.
See, she didn't know
Ola's
his headliner.
Ola's hilarious.
Said headliner, and then she took off. Left.
Ola's hilarious, yeah. I do this, I do a bit, because I sing opera, so I do this bit where I translate actual opera lyrics in, like, so I sing, like, la, 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 like, full, like, proper opera, and then I'm just like, oh, daddy, my love. So I, like, it's, you know, and I break it, it brings the room down, you know, just like, ah, they have no idea what's going on, so it brings the house down. But, through it, I kind of like, you know, there's one part where she's like threatening to throw herself off a bridge and it's like, oh my God, it's like a Trump tweet now, you know. And then at the end, she finishes it like, I am anguished. I am tormented. Oh God, I want to die. And then I kind of finished the joke and I was like, well, now we know she's just been on her period this whole time, you know. And that's, you know, obviously the finishing and it's lovely and la la la. I was doing this gig in Brighton, and for the Americans that are listening, Brighton is like the Portland of the
San
UK,
Francisco.
San Francisco, like the California of the UK, basically. So I was doing this gig, and they fucking love the opera because it's Brighton, you know, it's England, you know, Elaine Page, Michael Ball, they all shit themselves for that kind of stuff. And so, like, everyone was like, oh my God, I really loved it, oh my God, I really loved it, oh my God, I really loved it, you know. And then this woman comes out just like, I really liked your set, but. and I was just like, why didn't she give any pointers to any of the men who were on? Because there was another open spot that night. Like, there was another open spot that night who, you know, maybe she could have corrected. But, like, why did she feel the need to correct me in the first place? And then she goes on and she's like, I really liked your set, but I wish you hadn't made it about a woman's period. Of just, like...
Is that when you said, why are you on yours?
Yeah, no. I said, it's because, like, I am a woman... And I'm going to make jokes about things that affect my life. It's just like, you want to tell me that you're some sort of prancing pony when you're, you know what I mean? Like, it's just the gall of it.
Well, people
the
don't
absolute
like,
gall of
people
it.
Don't like when the mirror is turned around on them as well.
But I also think that stand-up in this country is a bigger business.
Yes.
I think there are a lot of very large names that are touring all the time. They're doing very large shows, and there's a lot of money involved. And
sure.
I think whenever something like that happens, it's on a lot of channels here.
God, yeah.
10 channels at night that have, like, comedy all the time. Mm-hmm. And when you do
like
that.
Proper stand-up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so when you do that, I think people who go see live performance, they might be more accustomed to what they see on television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their senses, I don't say would have been dulled, but their senses might have been altered in such a way that they're something used to something a bit more mainstream and commercial. So when they see live performance, they're a bit shocked and stunned by what they're going through.
Yeah.
And also, I think they've seen a lot of one type of comedy on TV, and so they think they know what comedy should look like.
Sure.
That mainstream stuff. It's the stuff on TV. No offense to anyone on TV, like people like Russell Howard. He's a fantastic. Have you seen him live, Russell Howard?
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he's fantastic on stage. They need to have this ability to kind of be accessible to the lowest common denominator. But they are great comedians, but they also need to have that accessibility. So when they're on when they're on TV, they're not doing anything too controversial.
Of course, they don't want people leaving the room. The TV producers want to make money. Yeah. But I think that people. You know, when I first came over in the 90s, comedy in this country had less of a national profile attached to it. Mm. There were big names, obviously, but not the number there are now, not the number of touring comics are now.
Mm.
And it was much more of an alternative scene, even the mainstream scene, whatever that was. In fact, the mainstream scene was alternative then. It was it was a reaction to the previous three decades of stand-up.
Yep.
So I think then you could do whatever. I mean, there were all sorts of acts on stage. You'd see, I saw a lot more women then on the comedy stages here.
Mm.
I saw a lot more double acts, music acts, all sorts.
Yep.
And now, you know, you see a lot of something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that may change and shift. And I think when you say people are getting, maybe get more snowflakey now,
yeah.
I think that they feel like they want to see themselves positively portrayed on stage.
Mm.
And we all know that people with the largest pull, shut up their ass, are middle-class white people. And so they're the ones that can afford comedy now. It used to be less, it's an expensive fetish like leather or yoga. And it's full of people who are middle-class and from whatever, suburbs, and they want to see that.
Yeah. These same people who are offended at my jokes when they're pissed are the ones who are hitting on me in a bar. I'm sorry.
That's kind of hot.
Do you know what I mean? After this gig as well.
No one's hit on me in a long time in a club.
That's offensive.
Yeah.
I think everyone should hit on Scott Capurro. He's gorgeous. Look at him.
That's good. And I think that's how we're going to end it. That's
really?
There, guys. Yeah, we'll end it on you. Guys, thanks a lot for joining me. If you are offended by anything that was said here today, please go fuck yourself. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Chelsea. Guys, hey, what do you got coming up? You're going to California?
I'm touring Korea.
Korea?
Yeah, I'm
wow,
wow. Danger zone.
Whatever. You're just saying that because of the podcast.
I like to go to the... Yes, I'll be in California.
Okay.
From September 11th. Cheap time to travel. Not sure why. And then I'm back in November. But yeah, I'm playing all sorts of California. They're all on my website.
Perfect. And Chelsea, what do you got going on?
I run a nice little Noob to Hero Night in Herne Hill. Got some exciting projects coming up with that. Just, the
stand-up. Middle-class white people, though. Herne Hill, Jesus.
No. They're all, like, really young and fun. Like, we've had a really nice mix of audience of, like, we had, like, one northern lady that was really offended that, like, Ishan, you know Ishan Akbar?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Ishan's lovely, and he's always pushing the buttons with, like, stereotypes. So, like, we had one northern woman who got really offended because he thought she was racist because she's northern. I was just like, what? What? Like, it was just, So
it's a good show.
We've had a really nice mix of people from all walks of life. But, yeah, the standard's been insanely high. I'm talking to a couple kind of bigger names about coming down. I'm like, and to try some stuff, which is really fun. I'm really excited about it. So, yeah, it's off-the-cuff comedy, Herne Hill, and it's going to be off the chain.
That's good. And I also run NFL in London. So if anyone is around and want to come to the biggest NFL parties in all of Europe, stick them down to the Hippodrome Casino on Sunday and tomorrow night, Thursday, for the Patriots versus Chiefs. I will be running the biggest.
You do the Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, everything. Oh yeah.
Is there gonna be turkey?
There will be.
Oh my god.
It's turducken.
Where?
But thank you guys. Oh, enjoy. We'll talk about it later.